2021, we did like 30 grand. 2022, we did like 500 grand. 2023, we did 2 million. I would hope to hit 5 this year. And that's still being made 54 soaps at a time, the exact same way I used to make it in my kitchen, because it's the only way I know how to make soap.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is John Larkin, the founder of The Black Stuff. He started making soap in his kitchen during lockdown. He spent 30 grand to get it off the ground, and he's going to turn over 5 million euro this year. Here's how he's doing it.
Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish businesses who grew from one idea to become world-class companies, able to compete with the best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to become more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. Visit localenterprise.ie or click the link in the bio below. Okay, you know me. You know I'm massively into my health, fitness and training. But there's one thing I haven't spoken about before, and that is a product I take every single day. It's a product called Resilience, and it's made by an Irish company called Ethos. What's kind of funny is that every single entrepreneur I meet, that is the one characteristic they have, incredible resilience. So I like that little play on words. It's a multifunctional supplement that supports cognitive function, immunity, which is super important this time of year, energy levels, and it keeps stress at bay. I also love it because it's easy. If you're bringing anything new habit into your life, it has to be easy, and taking resilience is so simple. I simply mix it in a glass of water every single morning. And I always throw a couple of extra in my gym bag to keep them with me. It's a really tasty blood orange flavor as well. It ticks all the boxes. It has B vitamins, amino acids, vitamin C, and adaptogens like reishi mushroom and ashwagandha. So, if you want to try it, I think you should. Go to weareethos.com. And because I like it so much, the guys have given me a discount code. So if you go to weareethos.com, enter Gary Fox at the checkout, you'll get 20% off, which makes taking resilience about a euro a day, which is an unbelievable price for building some inner resilience. Check out weareethos.com. If you've been listening for a while, you'll know Iconic Offices have been my partner and home in the pod for a long time now. Working and recording their spaces has helped support the ambitious goals of the pod and, to be honest, really helped it grow. So I partner with them to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, the opportunity to work from Iconic Offices spaces and experience it for yourself. No fees, no catches. Simply visit the Iconic Offices link in the show notes below and enter the code GARY24 and claim your free co-working day pass, or bring the whole team with you and book a day office.
John, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
I think we've had one of the best chats already. I haven't even started yet.
Yeah. It's been entertaining already, yeah.
You've had a wild ride.
Yeah, I've never had a conventional job in my life.
That's what we love to hear.
Yeah.
What was your first job?
So
your first non-job, I'm going to call it.
Yeah, my background's marketing advertising. I did a master's in advertising once back when I was, I don't know, 24 or something. I took the long scenic route through college, of course. And part of that, there was a placement in an ad agency. And so I spent 3 months in an ad agency, and then I had a week off at the end of the placement, and they called me back in and they said, yeah, we want to offer you a full-time job. And I think the starting salary was like £20,000 or something. But in my week off, I had earned more than that playing poker online. So my first job, I suppose, was playing poker for a living. And I did that for 10 years.
Wow. Yeah. What a job.
Yeah, it was interesting and very, very different. Yeah.
So how do you become a professional poker player?
Extreme competitiveness, a willingness to learn, a willingness to lose, a willingness to study. So when I started out, it was literally the dawn of online poker. There was no resources. I had to buy books from guys who wrote them in the 80s, Wild West poker, and learn. And people viewed it as gambling, let's say, and they played it as if they were gambling. Whereas, you know, I've never actually bet on horses in my life or sports, even though I played poker for a living for 10
really?
Years. Yeah, I viewed it as a game and as a mathematical challenge. And I always took that approach to it.
It's probably why you're so good at it, the discipline.
Yeah, it was about trying to outwit somebody, not necessarily about trying to get lucky. So I love often that. The cards actually didn't mean much. It was more about trying to figure out what you had and play the correct game according to what I thought you had.
Right. And was this online, in person, or what way was it?
I'd say over the 10 years, it was like 95% online. I did play a bit in real life, I suppose, as well. Went to Vegas a few times, played the Irish Open a few times, various degrees of success. But my game was kind of cash online. Yeah. Yeah.
What does a day in the life of a professional poker player look like?
Well,
that is a question I've always wanted to ask.
What I used to do was wake up at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. on a Sunday morning and sit down refreshed and play poker against Americans who were coming home from the pub on a Saturday night. So that was one of the big tactics, was use the time difference to your advantage.
I love that. Yeah. That's the strategies. Don't learn that in a book.
Yeah,
learn that exactly. By experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And what would your week look like then if that was one day or one afternoon or one morning, I should say?
Yeah.
What was the rest of the week?
So I tended to kind of work nights because of that. So I was up half the night playing cards. Sometimes I didn't go to bed for a few days. You know, it wasn't very structured, put it that way. I remember my wife kind of coming home once and saying, you know, come on, we have this thing we're going to. And I hadn't been to bed in 2 days because I'd just been waiting for this guy to lose his money. And there was no way I was leaving that table until my target, let's say, went broke, which they did eventually.
How long were you playing for?
That session was probably like 40 odd hours.
What?
I was just not going to leave the table until the guy I was playing against left the table. There was just no way. I would have stayed there for a week if I had to. Yeah. Yeah. So you do what you have to do.
What was the thinking behind that?
Experience. Sometimes there's a lot of money to be made from somebody who doesn't play correctly. And often they will get lucky and win a lot of money, not necessarily from me, but this guy was sitting on a small fortune and I knew the way he was playing that inevitably he was going to either leave or lose it. So as long as he was sitting there, I was sitting there playing with him and having fun, and eventually lost all his money. Yeah.
40 hours. Yeah. How much money are we talking about?
Like five figures. Yeah. A substantial amount. Yeah. Yeah.
That's 40 hours well spent.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Well, yeah. I can tell you some funny stories about that, but one of them involves going to a prenatal class. I'll tell you the story, right? So the thing that my wife wanted me to go was a prenatal class. She was pregnant with her first child. So we went into the coom and I hadn't slept in like 2 nights. And there was like 100 pregnant women and partners in this room. And they kind of said at the beginning, now, if anyone doesn't feel well, there's an area over here where you can lie down and take a rest or whatever. And we were just sitting in these chairs and they were talking and whatever about pregnancy and putting on videos. And oh my God. And the room was getting hot and I was starting to doze off. And then at one point I literally fell asleep in the chair and, the presenter noticed, because I think we were sitting in the front for some crazy reason. And so eventually I was kind of ushered over into the pillows and I had a little snooze.
They thought you were feeling unwell due to the stress and strains of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But actually it was just I hadn't slept. So
how did your wife make of that?
Took the full 9 months or 6 months to forgive me for that one.
I'd imagine so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So you were able to sustain that then for 10 years?
Yeah. So this was kind of the tail end of 10 years. Let's say that was probably year 8 or 9, something around that. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't play for long after we had kids, but it was kind of in my 20s, let's say. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's so many ways to go with this. I mean, I'm even kind of befuddled. And then how did it differ when you were in person? Did you enjoy the in-person? Did you like travel? What way was that?
Yeah, so people think online poker is just about the cards, but actually a lot of it is about emotion and getting under people's skin and playing abnormally, let's say, to wind somebody up so that they think you're a bad player. And, you know, there's a lot of strategy to online, way more than people realize. And the way I played throughout my career was always very, let's say, aggressively and active. So the vast majority of people, if you play correctly, would be folding 90% of their hands, whereas I'd be playing maybe 70% of my hands, especially if I was targeting you. And if every time you raised, I'd be in. So I'd be giving a lot of action to get a lot of action in return.
Right.
And that doesn't necessarily translate into in person. It's very different in person when everyone's looking at you around the table. But I still played the same style, I guess. But people tend to frown at you more in person, I find, when you don't play correctly.
A bit more pissed off at you as well after 40 hours and you just wipe them out.
Yeah.
So you understood that online was your forte. You understood that the online psychology piece was your forte.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
I could usually tell when somebody's getting pissed off, pardon my French. And when people are angry with you, they play very differently because they're just trying to beat you. They're not trying to win the game.
That's fascinating because you would have thought it'd be the other way around. You would have thought, oh, in person's easier because you can just see Gary's getting pissed off or Gary's getting wound up because I've just beaten him 10 times.
But put it this way, if I'm sitting here beside you and we were playing online poker and every single time you raised, I called you or I raised you back, every single time without fail, you would notice that very quickly. And all of a sudden it becomes very personal between me and you, even though there might be four or five other people sitting at the table. It becomes a personal battle. And then all of a sudden, cards go out the window, people start playing irrationally, and once you, I know what you know and I know what you're thinking, it suddenly becomes a game of mind games, let's say.
So you were a student of human psychology, essentially, online.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And then why would you leave that?
Industry changes. They banned online poker in the US. It became a lot more competitive. But mainly down to industry regulation. You know, banning in the US was huge for the market.
US was mainly where you would play?
Yeah. Yeah, that's who I liked playing against the most. I played on USA sites rather than European sites.
Why?
Americans love to bet. They love to go all in. And I love to call.
Simple. There's the psychology piece again.
Yeah.
So what did you do next?
So after that, after I decided that I was no longer doing that, a friend of mine had a technology startup. So I ended up joining his team and working in digital marketing for, you know, a year or so with them. And like, because it was a friend of mine, we were working out of his house and, you know, probably gave it 60, 70 hours a week, really went full on into it and learned everything I could. And we had significant impact as well on that business. So that was my first foray into it. So it was into technology and into software. It was a SaaS. It was a SaaS application.
Was it hard to walk away from that though? Being your own boss, choosing your own hours, having considerable windfalls?
Yeah, it was different, right? I've never really worked for anyone, you know, even when I went in and joined him, I was kind of doing my own thing. And I guess that's probably a challenge for me as a person. You know, I probably don't respond to rules and things like that very well.
That's what my wife says about me all the time.
Yeah.
That's her consistent thing. She goes, yeah, you just don't deal with authority. I'm like, really? I don't know.
She goes, I'm a bit like that. Yeah. So there was challenges, you know, and then later on in life when I did actually have a real job once, you know, luckily I was kind of second in command. So, you know, as long as you could navigate the relationship well with the person who is in command, it doesn't feel so much as work. And I guess I've never treated a job as if it wasn't my own business through my entire career, whether I was working for somebody else or working for myself. So I've always, everything I've got into 150%. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
It's just the only way I can operate. I don't like doing things by half. When I do things, I'm either all in or I'm out. Right?
Nice pun.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just been consistent the whole way. Either I get into something and I'm like, you know, I'm playing poker and now I'm playing poker every single minute of every day. And when I'm not playing poker, I'm reading books or I'm watching videos or whatever. And then when I get into software, you know, I'm learning every single thing. I even taught myself to code at one point, you know. I go the extra mile to just learn everything I can about an industry if I'm doing it. So it's just kind of my wife would say I'm probably obsessive compulsive, and I probably am. Yeah.
But you know how to manage it yourself. You know the skills and the strengths that gives you.
Yeah. When I do something, I do it by 110%. Yeah.
So after the ads business, then how long were you in the ads, the first business?
So that was a software company. It was actually, it was a mobile app prototyping software company. I was with them for about maybe 2 years, year and a half, something like that. And then I left that company and I joined, I met a guy and we ended up kind of, he was starting it. I ended up kind of co-founding with him. It was another SaaS software as a service company. It was putting together e-commerce with Facebook advertising. So make it easy for e-commerce merchants to advertise their goods on Facebook by leveraging the platforms.
So this would have been back kind of the early stages of Facebook ads.
2012.
Right in the sweet spot.
Yeah. It's literally the dawn of e-commerce and the dawn of Facebook ads. So it was an interesting time. I wish I'd started an e-commerce business
rather than a or bought stock in just Meta and on Shopify.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I wish I'd done that. Because that would have been very fruitful. So we were working on that business for a few years, raised a load of money. One of my co-founders went and lived in San Francisco. We were doing the whole startup dream. Ultimately, we were a bit too early and it didn't work out. Mm. But a fantastic experience. Yeah, learned so much.
You seem to be quite good at spotting trends. You seem to be quite good at spotting things at the right time. Where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, that's a probably a valid point. And something I say to myself is you need to act more when you spot them.
It's discerning between a trend and just a notion I'm after having. Trying to decide between two of those things.
Yeah. I am relatively good. I wish I was a little bit better at taking action because, I wouldn't say I'm a trendsetter or an early adopter per se, but I'm definitely, when crypto started, I remember laughing with a friend of mine in that SaaS business going, hey, we don't actually pay the bills here. We've got free power. We should start mining crypto. Mm. And we went as far as exploring it, but we never did it. Aware of trends, but maybe not the best at taking action on them historically. Yeah.
So you did the startup dream. It was too early. So what would you do next?
So when we were forced to close that business because we ran out of cash, one of my co-founders went to work at Facebook and I joined a startup called Mucol. It was very early on. They have this device that was alerting farmers when a cow was going to give birth. So it was a wearable technology for cows.
That's a shift away from Facebook ads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What drew you there?
Well, originally, they were trying to hire me and I was like, I don't know anything about cows. I'm not interested in this.
It's a hard left, in fairness.
Yeah, this is crazy. No way. And we had multiple meetings and all the time I was kind of like hesitant, but at the same time, slightly drawn to it. I'd learned about software and then this was hardware. And so I thought I could maybe learn a lot here with wearables and the technology. So I ended up joining them as COO and, like I said, when I get into things, get full into things. So, 6 months later, I'm thinking about buying a farm and getting cows of my own and, know way more about cows than I ever should. We built software to help farmers manage their herds. And probably peak moment throughout those 3 years was I was down on a farm somewhere down the country, and you can hear from my voice, I'm not, the type who's around cows often, but he asked me what type of cows I had and not sarcastically. And I thought, oh gosh,
I've arrived. You just weren't wearing brand new wellies. That's always a giveaway, right?
I knew so much about cows that he thought I must have cows.
How many head do you have?
Yeah.
So that's an unusual move though. Like, were you not kind of apprehensive to make such a hard move?
It was still a startup. It was, it was actually very exciting. And it was at the very beginning of that journey. Mucol actually grew very well over those number of years. I was excited by it. It was different. It was unique. It was wearable technology. Kind of, don't forget, this is probably 2016 now. There wasn't a ton of wearables going on. Fitbit had probably just been invented. It was interesting technology and interesting time. So I was kind of drawn to that. So we grew that from a standing start into a very successful business. We released another hardware product, which was a collar worn by a bull that identifies when cows are in heat. And then we built a whole software piece in the middle to use all that data for the farmers. So it was kind of interesting. Yeah.
And what was the next step in the journey?
So at the end of that period of time, I decided to move on and do my own thing. You know, I had kind of itchings to be my own boss still. And I ended up getting involved back more in more traditional e-commerce. I helped a friend of mine grow an e-commerce business very successfully over a period of years, and it was a print-on-demand business. So we went from a standing start there to peak, I suppose, ad spend of, you know, probably, I think it was maxed out at about 100 grand a day, one Black Friday weekend. And that was over the space of 1 year, from nothing to 100 grand a day, which was kind of insane, and learned a lot there as well. That business is phenomenal and is still going.
That's a phenomenal 100 grand per day of ad spend.
Yeah. That was a Black Friday. Gosh, I can't even remember what year it was, but like 2018, something like that. We turned over multiple millions over the weekend. So
that's phenomenal. Now that makes sense to me, because as a poker player, I can see the e-commerce, I can see the numbers, I can see the leverage, I can see all that kind of.
Yes.
Is that what you got involved in?
Yeah. So I'm good at that. I've always been good at that. I'm good at, first of all, I'm not afraid of spending money.
Clearly, yeah.
And taking risk, right? So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing if you're looking for an ads
calculated
guy.
Calculated risk, right?
Yeah, calculated risk.
But with ads, it must have seemed so logical to you, because return on investment,
exactly,
odds, percentages, numbers.
Yeah.
For me, I can see that completely for you in terms of, that makes total sense. You'd be a savant compared to, like, with poker, you're making educated decisions with some of the information. With ads, you're making the information, you're making the decision with all the information.
Yeah, it's so much easier.
But it's like levels, right? It's like you've played the game on 10 and now you're playing the game on 6 and you're like, why is this so easy?
Yeah.
I spend one and I make 5. Oh my God.
And it also helped that, you know, I had a background in Facebook software, so I knew the ins and outs of the platform.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also have an advertising master's in my back pocket, so that kind of helps as well, a little less than you'd think.
I did marketing. A little.
It was a bit gamified as well, you know what I mean? But it was also great times in the world of Facebook ads. You know, Facebook
ads were really coming back then. It really was the height, I suppose, when you get into it, 2012, 2013, it was really starting to bubble. And then by 2016, 2017, it was a proven model.
Yeah.
You know, you put in X, you get out Y.
Yeah.
It was very much kind of like people were scaling rapidly, and it was the platform. There was no like, oh, we'll split it between this, this, and this, and this. It was the platform.
Yeah. And now that business was phenomenal, but it wasn't my business. And I never really... When I left Mucol, I intended to start my own business, and I ended up getting dragged into this. And then it was making so much money that, like, you know, it was like, okay, let's do this for a while, if you know what I mean. So made a great return on that over a couple of years, and ended up leveraging that into starting a few other e-commerce ventures to various degrees of success. One was another print-on-demand thing, which had great potential, but didn't actually end up being great in the end. And another kind of business that turned into a little bit of an exit, which was good. But all that kind of led to me starting the Black Stuff in 2021.
I love that journey, because I'm getting a lot of serial founders on now, because I'm interested in this learnings piece, because there's such a different conversation with an entrepreneur who's done 1, 2, 3, 4 and been through that, because the learnings are just monumental. Like what you've distilled there, and what are we in now? We're 20 minutes in. What you've distilled in 20 minutes, like a lifetime of learning, bringing you to this moment of the Black Stuff. Like everything adds on. I think that's so interesting, because as founders, I have this theory about failure. It's only failure when you stop.
Yeah.
If you learn, not failure. If you take the learnings and bring them on to the next one, not failure. It's the learnings when you stop, the failings when you stop.
Yeah.
For you, each time was just adding on to the knowledge base. And at the time, it can be hard because you're so into it that you're like, oh, this is just a terrible experience. But then when you compound it, like everything you learned through poker made you an exceptional ads buyer.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
And you're totally right on that. Like when you make mistakes, you learn for sure.
Good entrepreneurs do, not everybody. A lot of people make the same ones over and over and keep wondering what's happening.
And like when I used to play poker for a living, I used to go back and actually look at the hands that I played rather than just trying to forget about them, right? And trying to figure out what could I have done different, or what should I have done different, or how did they play versus how did I play? And was I actually making good decisions? And like now it's standard. People do that and they've actually got software that analyzes it for them. But back then, you know, you're literally looking at a spreadsheet. And I took that the whole way through. So, you know, part of the decision to join Mucol was I thought I would learn more about hardware. You know, part of the decision about the previous business was to learn software. And ultimately, e-commerce is where I really wanted to go. You know, and the decisions around starting the black stuff were kind of, it wasn't driven by like, I love soap and I want to make soap. It was more driven by what is a great opportunity in e-commerce. So it was kind of an analytical decision-making process that took a while.
I love that because there's this thing of like, oh, it has to be your passion. It has to be your why. It has to be this. Yes, why you're doing it is important, but the product itself doesn't have to be your reason you get up in the morning. It can be, for me, it's being my own boss, having freedom. That's why I do this. That's why I'm my own boss. It's the freedom thing. It's probably a deeper psychological thing about authority if we want to go real deep, but it's not therapy. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
And it's that thing of like, my last business was property management. It's not related to media at all.
Yeah, but it's doing your thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, and as I get a bit older, I'm seeing all these layers now deepening. And Kenny, you're upgrading your own software going, okay, now I know a little bit more about that. And you learn about yourself as well. And I love that. You're like, this was analytical. So talk to me. And you did the thing I love. You brought samples in. And this is cool. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're not, go subscribe on YouTube, The Entrepreneur Experiment. You will see the black stuff. We've got the Celtic Tiger and we've got Irish Mountain Rain. So talk to me what I'm holding here for people on audio.
Yeah. So I guess, first of all, they're handmade, natural, fully natural soaps for men. Made from all natural ingredients. We don't use things like fragrances because that would have been easy. So for some reason, there's two crazy things I've done in this business, right? So one of them was when I started, I decided to take the decision to actually make the products ourselves, you know, and initially for the first 18 months, it was essentially me in my kitchen making soap like a lunatic. And the second crazy thing was, you know, I also decided not only am I going to make every product, I'm also going to invent every scent profile that we have, right? So I'm not going to buy fragrances off the shelf. I'm actually going to buy natural essential oils and try and blend them and mix them and create my own scent profiles.
And they're two interesting learnings to pull out because that's exactly the opposite of what people would say you should do. So why'd you do it that way?
Everything in my life leading up to this moment had been about me wanting to build a proper business of my own, let's say. And I wanted to be authentic and I just wanted to do it in an open and transparent and authentic way and not take any shortcuts.
I love that. I thought you were going to say, I heard everything in my life has to be hard. But I love that you're like, this is going to be me. I'm going to build this the way I want to build it.
Yeah.
And everything, it was your time to do it then. You learned all your learnings. You had the self-awareness to know what you wanted.
We weren't going anywhere. There was nothing else to do.
Also a good reason.
You know, there was nothing else to do. So just decided, you know, it wasn't part of the plan originally. You know, when I came up with the idea to sell soap online, right? So originally, we'll backtrack a second. Like the original thing was purely analytical, as we discussed, right? So it was me making a conscious decision as to what would make a good e-commerce product, right? So first and foremost, it needs to be consumable, right? Because then when you get a customer, they come back and they buy more. Right. And that needs to be small and easy to ship and have lots of variants, like soap is different scents, and ideally lead into complementary products. You know, we now sell natural deodorant and we have a few other products in the works. So all of those were calculated business decisions. The obvious thing to do would to be find a manufacturer, get them to make the products. And this is what most people do who are sane. And just build the brand around it. And that's perfectly normal and what most people do. Because of COVID, nothing was shipping. We couldn't get samples, even though we bought them from various different factories around the world. And I just kind of started researching the market myself and ended up watching a YouTube video of somebody making soap and thought, you know, that looks interesting. Maybe I'll learn if I make soap. So I bought ingredients on Amazon, who were the only people who would deliver anything back then. This is like January 2021, right? We're in full lockdown. We couldn't go more than 5K from the house. Stuff arrived to the house and I started tinkering with it and tried making soap and wasn't great, to be honest. The first soap I made actually cut myself in the stomach, you know.
Why?
I tried to use sand from the beach and water from the sea. And
that sounds lovely.
Yeah. But it turns out most of the sand on the beach that I went to, where it was actually kind of crushed seashells and glass. So it was a lot rougher than I expected.
I was going to say natural exfoliant. Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. I would have followed this path as well. Yeah,
it nearly took a whole layer of skin off. But I didn't give up. So instead I changed what I was doing. I altered my recipe and, you know, and like I said earlier, when I do things full on. So within a matter of weeks, more and more and more and more stuff was arriving in the house. And initially fragrances came and then essential oils, as I kind of figured out that I wanted to do it myself. And I, you know, what went from making soap one day turned into making soap every day. And, you know, me asking my neighbors and my wife and my friends, you know, to smell things, to tell what they thought.
Having 2-hour showers every day where you're like,
exactly.
Product testing.
And that happened, you know.
It sounds hard. Shower
with 7 or 8 different soaps trying to test them out.
Like, I know it's funny, like, but it sounds bloody hard to make, like, you are making something from scratch when you've no experience making any soap, like.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard. Like, you would break a sweat.
Handy, you can just have another shower. Yeah.
I remember when I first started, I wasn't great at mixing, you know. So you mix a bowl, you have to mix the oil and the lye and by hand like this, right? And I remember, you know, making, and my arm was killing me. And fast forward 6 months, I was like, my right arm could like spin faster than any machine, you know, and I was making hundreds of soaps a day, in my kitchen still. So it kind of evolved. Started out as an idea, turned into a passion. But like you said, you don't necessarily need to have a passion. I knew that, because if I could get into cows, I could definitely get into soap.
It's good learning, to be fair. Yeah, you got self-awareness to know. Yeah. And then at what stage did you kind of go, okay, let's start vlogging this now. We're ready.
So my plan originally was, you know, I'll sell this to the Irish-American diaspora, right? If it goes wrong, it's in America. Nobody knows me. It's not going to be too embarrassing, you know. So that was my initial plan, because not only am I going to make soap myself and create my own scents, I'm also going to sell in America rather than on my doorstep. I don't know why. I do know why I decided to do that, because I just thought it was an angle that we could sell.
Right? But analytically, it would seem logical. I would imagine it's one of the biggest soap markets in the world, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's huge. So I was making the products myself in my kitchen. I was shipping it to a warehouse in the States. I set up a 3PL before I launched. And, you know, I had 100 of each made and 6 different scents when I launched. And so I built everything, right? And we launched in the States and created some ads, you know, low spend initially, really bad ads, because didn't have any feedback yet from customers or
when was this? What time was this?
This is probably, you know, if it started January 21, we're probably at like May 21 now.
Okay. So pretty quickly.
Yeah. It took me, you know, it took me 5 months to come up with 6 different scents and a recipe that I liked. And
how many bars of soap do you reckon you made?
Oh, hundreds, maybe thousands. Yeah. At one point I had a spreadsheet which started up, and at one point I think it was 30 grand in the hole that I'd spent on ingredients.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
30
like full on. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And that was like waste. Like, you never get that back. That was just like me making, I was literally making multiple times.
R&D.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea it was going to be that expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. And that wasn't necessarily in the hole also. That was like, I was building up a collection of essential oils, which are expensive. You know what I mean? Because I need to smell them all. Do I know what I'm going to, I don't even know what they smell like. I need to buy them all. So, kind of crazy beginnings, right? But anyway, fast forward, I've come up with the branding, come up with the packaging, the 6 different soaps we're launching with. I create some ads in the States. I get my first sale on the first day. It's like, brilliant. Somebody bought it.
When you say ads, where were you running them?
The States.
No, but like where?
On Facebook, Instagram.
Instagram.
So okay. Platforms I know. Yeah. Yeah. So we get the first sale. And within the kind of first week, there was one pivotal moment where I get a message from a customer, and we'd like sold to 10 people at this point. Like, it's not going great. You know, but some people have bought, right? So I'm not stressing too much. But this guy contacts me and he's like, hey man, he's American, obviously, because I'm only targeting Americans. And he's
great,
like,
accent. Yeah, no, I got it from the accent too. It was brilliant.
Thanks. Yeah, that's not one of my fortes. So he contacts me and he's like, I'm going to be in Dublin. Can I meet you in person?
That's so
to get
random.
The soap. And this is like,
you're a week in.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it's like the start of June now, maybe.
This is how like a Netflix crime special begins.
Yeah. And I actually created, so I was documenting the whole thing on TikTok from the get-go, right? And one of my TikToks, I remember like alluding that I'm going to meet the serial killer, right? If I don't come out.
I can see why.
You know what I mean? So I arranged to meet this guy in town and I'm bringing him in his order of soap. And I meet him and he's perfectly nice and normal. And I buy him a pint and we had a chat. And turns out he was a natural soap enthusiast.
Okay.
So just like there's people who are into fine cigars and expensive watches and anything you name it, there's collectors of and enthusiasts of. Mm. He was really into handmade soap. That was his thing, which I didn't even know was a thing.
Neither did I until right now.
Yeah. And then, so it turns out he was in this Facebook group with like 700 other, mainly men, who were into like men's handmade soap.
And, niche within a niche within a niche.
Yeah. And they were all sharing ideas and soaps that they were using and what that smelled like and all this. And they used to trade soaps to each other and send them back and forth across the States. And yeah, so that was eye opening. So I learned a ton from that pint. And then it also turns out that he took a photo in his hotel room of what he had bought for me and posted in that group that evening. And then the next day or that evening, he contacted me and said, hey, I need more. And he ended up buying like loads more to bring back to the rest of the group in the States, and he was going to post to them from the States, even though I sold and had a 3PL setup in the States.
But isn't that the most bizarre story? And it just shows you the power of social, the power of advertising, but the power of picking a beautiful niche that is very niche, that is clearly identifiable. But like within 1 week, he had found you online, your ads had found him online, and you found a power user.
Yeah.
And then boom.
Yeah. So he ended up inviting me to join that group and I joined it, introduced myself and shared videos and conversations with people, what I was doing. And I probably got my first 100 customers out of that group.
That's huge.
Phenomenal.
That learning is massive. And I've heard the story a number of times from a number of founders now, and it's important to highlight this. So your first 100 might have come from that group. So you found that kind of like sweet spot.
Yeah.
Because the first 100 are everything, right?
Yeah.
First 10 are everything.
Yeah, I knew them all by name. You know what I mean? It was like, Jesus, Steve's after buying again.
Because people think, oh, you know, online ads, just throw some online ads. And you're like, well, it's not that simple, or everyone would be doing it.
Yeah.
Whereas you did it, but then you find you go deeper. You go deeper into the niche.
It also humanized, that's the word I was looking for. It also humanized the whole ad experience, right? Mm. So instead of just ads turning into customers, these are actual real people who I was interacting with, you know, and they'd message me and go, hey, I just bought. And then, you know, might have a conversation. And like I did, they say do things that are not scalable. I did a lot of unscalable stuff at the beginning.
Well, you did, but you didn't. You did online ads, which is the most scalable thing in the world. But then you dug deeper into that. You didn't just blast on like, oh, I just do ads, blah, blah, blah. You got into the weeds and figured it out.
Yeah. And had a lot of one-to-one conversations with these guys about my products and other products. And, you know, a lot of them I would consider friends now. And like of those 100 people, I'd say, you know, 70 or 80 are still in touch with me relatively regularly and are still customers of the Black Stuff, which is incredible. Yeah.
And how did you scale then? So that's your first 100, you know, your Facebook group might've been the first 100 along with ads. What was the next kind of 6 months?
So
this is May 21. So yeah, bring us through kind of the rest of 2021.
Yeah. So I think I turned over like 30 something grand in 2021. Like,
okay. So we haven't broke even, but we're nearly there.
Yeah. Like we're not in the black yet. You know, if you're looking at that spreadsheet, the bottom line is not looking amazing. But there's starting to be a little bit of light at the tunnel. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like there's something. I mean, I know a lot of businesses don't turn over 30K in the first month. I know a lot of funded businesses don't turn over 30K in their first couple of years.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's my stubbornness and probably also my own personal financial position at the time that I was able to wait it out and learn and adapt and improve and grow slowly. You know what I mean? Mm. So I never really pushed it. You know, I didn't start trying to scale ads. I didn't, You know, we spent next to nothing on ads that whole year. You know, a little bit of dabbling. It was more about learning the product, learning the customer, learning how they thought about the products, you know, what they liked. I ended up launching 4 new products and developing my strategy for limited editions, which have been absolutely vital and pivotal to the entire business since.
Limited edition. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So by the end of 2021, I started with 6 different soaps. And then I released 4 more. So my catalog, let's say, was up to 10 soaps, and I had a soap dish, right? So that was my products.
Are you still making these?
I haven't made much recently, but I still...
No, I mean, are you still making them up to this point?
Yeah. Oh, I'm making every product myself.
Wow.
Yeah, except for the soap dish, thankfully. I'm not quite carving wood.
I wouldn't put it past you, but go on.
No, but I'm making every... Yeah. So this entire year, it's just me in my kitchen, right? And I'm sending products to the States in box of 100 soaps, and my 3PL is shipping them to customers. And I start working on a natural deodorant in that period as well. And I guess that's why I wasn't trying to scale. I was trying to launch a second product, and that took months and months and months to get right as well. And I launched the natural deodorant at the tail end of 2021. So it was probably December 2021 when I launched that, and only 1 cent, right? Because I wanted to get feedback. In fact, it might've been earlier, might've been September, October. And I launched the second one in December. Yeah. But anyway, that whole year was about learning. And 2022, then I evolved my limited edition strategy, right? Which is not unique to me. Lots of people do this, right? But let me explain why it's so important to the black stuff, right? So instead of creating loads of different soaps, which if you just look at the business from a revenue perspective, every time you launch a new product, like a new soap or a new scent, you know, all your customers come in, they buy it, and it's brilliant, right? So it gets tempting to just release new products. And that's why sometimes you see people with a really big catalog when they're in an industry like this, which is scent-based or flavor-based, right? Every time we release something, we sell more. So yeah. Why wouldn't we keep doing that? Let's do that every month. Let's do that every week. But all of a sudden, the problem is your catalog becomes so inflated that you can't, and this was... because I make it all myself, I couldn't keep up, right? If I, you know, 10 was already 10 different scents.
That's a lot. Like
making it myself in my own kitchen was, you know, demanding enough already. So I knew that I couldn't just keep, like, I can go to like 15, 20 scents. I only have 20 days in the month that I'm going to be making, let's say. So I decided, well, let's do it as a limited edition, right? So in February of 2022, we launched Relax the Cax, which was our Valentine's Day limited edition.
I can see your advertising background coming through all the time.
Yeah.
Relax the Cax.
So I wanted to launch a product for Valentine's Day, but I didn't want it to be for women because I still wanted to keep us selling to men. So I didn't want to be a gift that they bought for their other half. And so the angle was, well, buy for yourself to relax, right? So we figured out what essential oils had the most relaxing properties, used that to create a scent profile. And the packaging was totally different. It was art-based. It was kind of Cupid in a bath. And it's very, very different to the packaging you see here. And I launched that. And all my customers came back and bought it. And that was fantastic. But then it's sold out, right? So then I did the same for St. Patrick's Day. 2022, we launched two new soaps. So it meant that we could create these moments in the business where our customers came back, bought the new thing, but then they also bought some of their old favorites.
Yeah.
And I just identified really quickly and at full price, sorry. So we're not launching a sale.
Yeah.
Right. So
that's the issue with the minute e-commerce.
Yeah. So, and that's one thing I hate about e-commerce, that is people who email market, it's like, what do? We just send another 10% discount, 20% discount.
Because then you stop buying. I see it myself. Yeah. I just wait because I know it's coming. I know the 25% is coming. I just got to wait. Even if I really need something, I'll be like, no, it's going to come soon.
You train the customer to wait for discounts. And I personally...
Pavlov's dog.
Yeah.
Ring the bell. They're going to wait for the discount.
So that was something I want to change with the black stuff. And we very rarely discount. We've never run a discount on Black Friday yet. We don't. I have another strategy for that.
Well, you're zigging on people's zag.
Yeah. Yeah. So the limited editions are great. And so that's kind of central to the whole strategy of this business. And we still, you know, Relax the Cax came back in January this year again. And the two soaps that I developed back in 2022, just launched them last week. Biggest day ever in the history of the Black Stuff was last Friday when we relaunched the Shamrock Saint and What's Your Poison, which are the two
That's big.
St. Paddy's Day ones. So yeah, we're still using the same strategy. And we've expanded our core line now to 11 soaps. So we have one extra.
Hey, we're just taking a quick break from today's episode to shout out our main sponsor. If you've been inspired listening to this amazing business person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the Local Enterprise Office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get that idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out Local Enterprise Week or log on to localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business. Now, back to the episode.
You're a master of human psychology, though. Like the scarcity, the FOMO, the fear of missing out, when it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
You see that great businesses are able to leverage that, and you're able to leverage that exceptionally well.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what we do then for Black Friday is we deliberately mark them out of stock, right? Because even if I didn't sell out, I was not going to be the guy still selling St. Patrick's Day soap in September.
It's great. Right? It sends out all the wrong signals as well. And so, I see e-commerce businesses doing that now. I'm like, oh gosh, just.
So we deliberately always have like, nope, it's gone now. And we just mark it out of stock, whether we sold it or not. Yeah. And that's tough. It's gone.
The good thing about you is that I'd imagine there's a long shelf life on these things.
Yes. Yeah, there is, which is great. But for Black Friday, what I end up doing is saying, well, if you spend, I've done the last 2 years or 3 years actually, and it's worked really well. 2 years maybe. If you spend a certain amount, you get a free mystery gift, which could be one of our out of stock limited editions, right? So we use Black Friday to offload all our old inventory that we didn't sell. And we just give it away for free.
Brilliant.
But they still buy it at full price, everything else. So and we have two layers. You know, if you spend 35, you get one. If you spend 65, you get two free products. And it's a brilliant way of clearing out our inventory while still selling everything at full price. Customer feels like they're getting good value for money.
And it's the novelty, the surprise effect.
Surprise.
How often in your life do you get a genuine surprise?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we do that and we're going to keep doing that. I think it's great. And I would highly recommend anyone in e-commerce to try and come up with something similar, because
that's brilliant.
If you just run a 30% off Black Friday sale, you know, that's actually 50% of your margin, your net profit you're giving away.
I was having a coffee with an e-commerce retailer recently, and we were sitting in Debray's on Grafton Street, and he's like, look down the street right now. When it was, this was Feb. So like, he's like, look down right now. We could see like Massimo Dutti, we could see, not Gucci, but one of the high-end brands, sale, yeah. In February, middle of February. And you're like, he's like, it's killing retail. He's like, sales are on all the time. Remember, it used to be like January sales.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. January sales. And people go crazy on Stephen's Morning.
Because they don't know what else to do. Somebody goes, well, what are we doing? Well, I guess we could put it on sale.
But it's all the time now.
Yeah.
Like you're just going to go on their sales constantly at certain brands and certain products.
But you're also teaching the consumer that like your high-value product, let's say that it's like, you know, I don't know, our designer jumper for 200 quid is now available for 80 quid. Hmm. You're teaching the consumer that actually it's not worth 200.
Exactly.
You can still make a profit when you sell it for less than half that. So all of a sudden you're devaluing your brand.
Price anchoring. People anchor on the lowest possible price. If you're like, oh, well, I got it for 80 quid last year. I'll just wait.
Yeah. And like my products aren't cheap because we're making them by hand and out of really good ingredients. So I don't want to create a discount brand. It's a premium brand. And I think part of the key to creating a premium brand is scarcity and a premium price that doesn't often get discounted.
Know your value.
Yeah.
In a world whereby everything is getting a rush to the bottom.
Yeah.
Especially online. People tend to do this online all the time.
Well, yeah.
Just launch sale. I started following this company called True Dark. We started following them?
No, I don't know.
Fascinating. Set up by two ex-members of the SAS. Really high-end outdoor gear. I started getting targeted by their ads. I was like, this looks cool. High-end, though. Premium stuff. You're talking 220 quid for a pair of trousers. I'm like, damn. Haven't bought anything yet, but I'm bloody going to.
Yeah. And I was like, you could swim through a marsh.
That's it. I could pretend I'm in the SAS. If I'm walking around in Wicklow and I'm wearing that fleece, I know I'm sorted.
Yeah.
But like,
it's again, the emotion and
the emotion, the anchoring, their branding is beautiful. You should definitely check it out. True Dark. It's very cool. But again, premium products.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff. You can just tell, even by the website. You just look at it and you go, yeah, that's premium stuff.
Yeah. I think that's really important. You know, the packaging that you see here is great, but we are changing that too over the next 6 months to be even more premium, let's say. You know, so we hired a branding and a marketing agency and kind of leaned more into the Irishness and differentiated more from our competitors and trying to make it more standalone, more premium looking, more Irish, but not Celtic Cross Irish, if you know what I mean.
Not diddly dee.
Yeah.
Not iron jumpers and leprechauns. Yeah.
So
I think that's a problem. Ireland is a bit of a branding problem, I think.
Yeah.
We have a country, especially a country with high end like beef and butter and really high end products. We do tend to go for the Paddy's Day. Aren't we all great? Let's have a pint.
Yeah.
Not a fan of that. I think we need to look up market a bit more.
Yeah. So we're undergoing that process at the Black Stuff. So it's still obviously going to be called the Black Stuff, but just our logo's changing, our packaging's changing, and the whole, we're trying to feel even more premium.
But I think there's a huge learning there as well. So you launched this in 2021. It's an evolution.
Yeah.
People wait and wait and wait and wait. Oh, when I've got the logo perfect, I'll launch.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
It doesn't matter if your product's absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
You'll spend so long.
I think I paid someone a fiver to create that logo, you know.
But that's fine.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Get launched.
Yeah.
Even if you're trying to launch a premium product. Yeah. But the product is excellent, I'm sure. That's the difference, right? Yeah. There's certain things you can go get into the product customer's hands.
Don't skimp on the product.
So you've spent 3 years perfecting the product and getting in product market fit.
Yeah.
So we're up to 2021. You've done 36K, 35K?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So talk to me about 2022.
Yeah, so that moment of launching the Relax the Cacs started 2022 and then leading into very quickly into two more limited editions in March for St. Patrick's Day in 22. That kind of actually was really vital to the business in terms of my confidence in it. You know, all of a sudden it was like, well, actually, we're starting to make a little bit more money here, and it started to really grow. And our old customers all came back for that. Right. And they bought all the old soaps again and deodorants. And I just very quickly, the metrics started looking really good. Right. People were coming back. They were giving us really great feedback in reviews. And they were coming back with their wallets and buying again at full price. So that's when we then started to try and scale up ads. Right. So now I have confidence in the product. We're not leaning into the Irish diaspora in the States. We're actually selling it as a quality product, albeit Irish. We launched in Ireland shortly thereafter, and it really started to take off, so much so that I could barely keep up with demand. And I actually,
that right hand is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. That right bicep is just bulging at the stage.
Yeah. I launched in Ireland and we sold, it's very quickly sold loads here. And then
why do you think that was?
Probably me and my ads. You know, I leaned into founder story. It was just me in my kitchen making soap. You know, it was all real and different.
Love it.
It was founder story type ads. I'll give you a tip, right? The best way to sell something is emotion, right? Number one, right? It's, you know, how does the product make you feel? It's very hard to do that with something like soap and deodorant, right? So I can't.
Yeah. I would have thought it would have, you know, a sensory thing.
It is a sensory thing. And that's post-purchase, right? But before you've bought the product, and it's a very personal thing, actually. Our customers are very attached to the product because
the smell of this one,
they use it when
unreal.
They make it, right? In their private place, in their own shower, right? So it is a very personal item, but to connect with a future customer, you can't really lean into the emotion of it. So I tend to lean into the founder story, which is telling my story, how I started my kitchen and showing me having made it and all that type of stuff. So that just resonated and worked really well. And all of a sudden it started working well in Ireland. But the downside was it's still me in my kitchen. And instead of having a 3PL in the States doing all the pick, pack and post, all of a sudden I've got like 50 orders that need posting, right? It takes quite a long time to box up their order, check that it's right, write them a little thank you note and bring it to the post office, right? So all of a sudden my time was like, oh gosh, I'm losing my day, right? So that was a catalyst to moving out of my house, hiring somebody to help and getting a little workshop going. So we did that in 2022.
Your wife must have been delighted.
Oh, yes. Our house was...
Kitchen is actually making food now, weirdly enough.
Our house was destroyed. Like, not physically, but
emotionally. Could have been worse. In fairness, it could have been, the neighbors could have been cooking meth. There's a lot of worse things you could have been doing.
The neighbors used to say, like, they always know when, you know, little Johnny's been in your house because he comes out and he smells of soap. I was like, yeah, because there's soap all over the house.
Curing way worse.
Yeah.
So you got a workshop 2022.
Yeah. So middle of 2022, I rented somewhere close to my house because I still wanted, you know, that kind of freedom, hired somebody to help. And that was really pivotal transformational moment. First of all, I no longer have to do the wash up. Right. Because it creates a mess. So, and I wasn't making it in my own house. And so I had a guy who I had hired before, actually, I hired him again. And he came in and he was doing the prep for me, he was doing the wash up for me, and he was doing the pick, pack, and post for me full time. But I was still physically making every single product. And that continued for another 6 months until the end of 2022 when I hired the first person to actually become a maker, right? So I hired somebody who had chef experience and I spent a couple of months teaching them how to make our products. So that was the end of 2022.
So many soaps were you making in a day in 2022, or even in a week?
So when I was making it by myself in my house, I was probably making over 100 soaps per day.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's nine in a bag, making 54 at a time. Times six, I might be making like 200-300 soaps a day by myself in my house, wow, plus deodorants. So maybe like 4 days a week, I was making soap, 1 day a week, making deodorants. And then when I moved to having somebody helping, I was able kind of to double that up, right? So it's making maybe 500-600 soaps a day. Right now we're making about 10,000 soaps a week.
What?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, if I go back to the very beginning of the business, you know, when I decided to actually make the product myself, I did the maths. It's like, is it feasible to hire people to make this 54 soaps at a time? Like, am I nuts? Am I just going to run out of money here? So I did it, the maths, and yeah, it is, you know,
people,
the maths work. you can scale up a business with a handmade product when you're selling at the price we do.
But so, when you know your stuff like you do, you've done it, you've made the thousands of bars, you know exactly how long it takes, exactly how much goes in, exactly how many hours, exactly the minutes. Like, that can't be, you can't learn that in a spreadsheet initially.
No.
That has to be done through literally.
Yeah. And I did everything. You know, for the first 18 months, I made every single product we sold. For the first 18 months, every customer that bought from us in Ireland, I packed it and brought it to the post office. You know, I knew most of them by name. I'd recognize if somebody bought more than once and all those things. And I think you learn a ton by doing it yourself. And I think it's invaluable. So when it comes to training somebody in, I know exactly how it works. Yeah. You know, when they're cutting the soap, I know how long it takes. I know how long it takes to put a soap in a box because I did that, you know.
At what point should someone hire someone? Because this is the big thing about this pod. I love giving tangibles. So at what point, if you're building or if you want to build something similar, at what point should you hire someone?
Earlier than you're comfortable doing it would be my insight. I wish I'd done it earlier. It was a big risk at the time, right? You know, we didn't turn over a ton in 2021. 2022 was showing promise, but, you know, we're still not making much money. And all of a sudden I'm signing a lease for a place. I'm agreeing to take on a salary full time, paying, you know, it's a large risk, but I would highly recommend somebody do it earlier than they're comfortable doing it.
That's always a tricky one. That's why I like asking that question, because it's so hard making that first hire.
Yeah.
And it's transformational almost every single time unless you're the wrong person. It's so powerful, that first hire, because it changes the whole game.
Yeah, big time. And it changed everything. You know, I still was able to work largely from home. I used to go up to the workshop for a couple hours every day. Davey was the guy I hired, who's still with me, would have everything ready. I'd come in, like, blitz out 700 soaps in the space of 2 hours, record a video for social media of me making it while I do it, go home, edit the video, put it live, work on my ads, work on my all the rest of the stuff. No, it was great. And we were in that workshop for a year until kind of the start of this year. Sorry, start of last year, we realized that Well, you should have seen the place. First of all, we had no space by the end of it. So by the end of the year, you know, there was just, you couldn't even barely move in this little workshop for the amount of stuff we had between soaps that were curing and packaging and, you know, orders going out and room to make. And yeah, so we outgrew it within a year.
Within a year. Wow.
Yeah.
How long did you think that was going to last you?
It seemed, I remember going in there, it seemed big. Right. Because I, out of my own house, I only had a tiny little home office that I was using and stuff was just hidden all over the house. You know, you'd look behind a door and there'd be 100 kilos of coconut oil, you know, it's literally all over the house. So it seemed huge when I agreed to rent it, you know, but the business just started growing so fast that space ran out. And then when you hire people, you know, it was myself and Davey for the first 6 months, but then we hired Vicky and then another couple of people joined us part-time and then another full-time in the January of the 23. All of a sudden people fill up space more and it feels very small. So when I decided that it was time to look at the next place, which is where we are now in Sandyford, that seemed absolutely huge when I first went to look at it at the beginning of last year. And you know, we're barely fitting in it already.
How many people you got now?
We have 10 full-time people.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. 10 full-time people. Yeah.
And this is why I love doing this podcast. I think there'd be a lot of people listening going, what?
Yeah.
10 people in Sandyford making soap. And I think Ireland is full of great people, great entrepreneurs who actually don't get profiled because we're obsessed with these foreign direct investment companies. We're obsessed with tech. Whereas these incredible businesses have been built here. And like, it's possible. That's what I love hearing these stories. It's possible to build a business like that at scale here.
Yeah. So if we, 2021, we did like 30 grand. 2022, we did like 500 grand. 2023, we did 2 million. And this year we should touch wood. I would hope to hit 5 this year. And that's still being made 54 soaps at a time. The exact same way I used to make it in my kitchen because it's the only way I know how to make soap.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's absolutely epic.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, and it's growing. And I can see a path to 10 and beyond. It's just about, for us now, it's about just making sure we're ahead of it. And, you know, there's all different challenges. You know, I had a print-on-demand business that I was involved with before, and it was great. You could scale it up so quickly because you didn't have to worry about inventory.
Yeah.
Whereas now, to get ahead of growth, we have to buy more raw materials, you know, so that we've got more on hand. We have to potentially hire more people and train them. We potentially need more space. You need to make the soap. You need to cure the soap. You need to get it around the world to your warehouses. We've now got a warehouse in the States, in Canada, in the UK, in Ireland. And if anyone knows a 3PL in Australia, I'm interested. You know,
a lot of unusual people listen to this podcast. You might find an email.
Yeah. And so like, and all that's before you can scale up your Facebook ads. You need to have all that in place. So we've already done that last year as part of our strategy for this year. So we're set up to hopefully take on 4.5 to 5 this year in turnover.
And have you raised funding or have you self-funded or how have you funded this?
No, it's all self-funded. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I went lower than the 38, I think, or the 30, where I put some money, more money in for growth over the past 2 years. But yeah, thankfully it's all, and I don't plan on raising money. It's not something I want to do. I'd rather grow it slower.
Slower. Yeah. Sounds like it's going okay. Sounds like you'd be all right.
It's going great. Yeah. But all our capital is in inventory and raw materials.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To get ahead of growth. Like
I'd say a number of things, but what changed? Because those jump up in figures is astronomical.
Yeah. That's just me scaling up my customer acquisition. You know, if we backtrack, I'm really good at ads, right? So it took a few years to get good at making and scaling up our manufacturing so that I can grow our customer acquisition. And, you know, right now we're acquiring, you know, over 100 new customers a day. Plus we've got like over 100 old customers coming back every single day. We have 40,000 customers right now around the world. And it's about aggressively trying to attract more people to the brand,
What platforms are good now?
Still, Facebook, Instagram is our core.
And when you say Facebook, Instagram, do you mean the actual Facebook old platform, or do you mean just Meta as a whole, as in Instagram and stuff?
Yeah, Meta as a whole.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still by far and away the best advertising platform ever known to man.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what about like the likes of TikTok and stuff? Has that?
Yeah. I mean, at the very beginning, when I started the business, I started TikTok and I was recording myself doing everything, and we still do it. But it's never unlocked growth the same way for us, at least the same way as Facebook has.
That's interesting. Why do you think that is?
Just two things. One, I probably know Facebook better.
Fair. Yeah. Okay.
And more comfortable. But number two is the demographic as well. Because I use myself in all my ads, I tend to attract people of a similar vintage, let's say, you know, so our customers aren't 20. They're more like 40. So less of them are likely to be on TikTok than on the likes of Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that. So that's probably part of it too. Now, our new branding might be more appealing to younger people. So
yeah, might need to get a couple of new faces on there. That's an absolutely phenomenal story.
Yeah.
So what's the plan this year then? Because you're clearly very analytical. Did you intentionally use poker strategy in business?
Yeah, I always, every decision is, you know, risk versus reward. Always. It's just how my brain works. There's a great term in poker called EV. I don't know if you've ever heard it, but it means expected value.
Okay.
So if you're 50-50 to win, your expected value is a half, right? If you're a 60-40 favorite, your expected value is 60%, right? If you're a huge favorite, you know, you might double your money, and that's your expected value. So everything I do in business is about expected value. It's like, well, you know, if I spend X on ads to acquire customers who are worth Y, how much is that going to generate in income and so on? And then it comes down to like looking at past user behavior to try and determine future behavior. So for example, there's a thing called cohort analysis. Do you know what that is?
No.
So cohort analysis is the most amazing thing for e-commerce businesses. So what that means is taking a month of new customers and looking at them over time. So if we go back to 2022, in January 2022, let's say we acquired 100 new customers or 1,000 new customers, first-time buyers in that month. And it's about looking at them over time. How did that group, we don't look at them as individuals, we look at them as a group. How did that group perform every month thereafter?
Okay.
How many from that cohort bought, right? So we have really, really strong cohort metrics. So every single month I look at more than 10% of that group bought again every single month thereafter, right? So if I acquire 1,000 or 100 customers January 2022, those customers accounted for 10 more sales in February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October. And at some point, I'm assuming it's going to be a drop off. I haven't seen that yet, you know, when we look back 18 months. But like this January gone, we had like 3,000 new customers. So when you look at that, you know that's going to be 300 more sales in February, March, April, May, June.
Okay. So it's like you're able to predict forward. Yeah.
So it's like a ladder of growth, a staircase of growth ahead of us. So I know, like, if we didn't sell to one new customer in the next 12 months, we would nearly have the same revenue as last year, just from our old customers coming back and buying again.
What's triggering them to repeat purchase? Is it you through email, through social, or is it natural?
Our soap, it dissolves in water and they end up with an empty box.
But that's interesting, right? And that is good. But then there is the friction of, let's go, my laptop must like reorder this. Like how's that happening?
That goes back to having a really, really good product.
Okay.
Yeah. Our product is genuinely really good and people enjoy using it. And when it runs out, they want to buy more. Okay. Now we do a great job of staying in touch with them, because 6 or 7 times throughout the year, we're launching new limited editions or the old limited editions coming back.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? Stay in front of mind, because you live in a world of constant distraction now. We're constantly bombarded with all these things. So it's staying front of mind.
So like, I know my calendar ahead of me. You know, January 1st, we relaunched Relax the Cax. Last week, we relaunched our St. Patrick's Day, 2 different soaps and stuff like that. I know June, we've got Sligo Surfing coming. I know September, we've got Arthur's Choice. I know December, we've got Deck the Bulls, and I know I've got Halloween stuff. So I know I've got these moments ahead of me throughout the year.
Yeah.
Where
you're proactive, not reactive.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's about layering onto that. Yeah. So when you said what's ahead of me in the year to come, it's all that stuff. But then we're also trying to, I guess, capture more revenue from our existing customers. So launching other products. But I'm slow to launch products because I want them to be as good quality as the existing products. Mm-hmm. So it took me like 8 months of testing, but we launched a diffuser in January.
Okay.
A reed diffuser. I can see there's one behind on the mantelpiece.
How do you pick what to build out?
So again, it's strategy, right? So instead of picking, oh, you mean products?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the diffuser came about because of convenience. We already had all the scents created, the essential oils. It's just putting it in a different vessel. So that was a product of convenience. Other products that we're launching are more about what our customers want. So we're looking at shaving products. We're looking at beard products. We're looking at things like that. Yeah.
Where could this go, John?
To the moon.
Genuinely, I have to say, this is episode probably 336 or 337. This is one of the most interesting, clever, strategic stories I've heard on the pod.
Well, thank you. I'll tell you what, I'm not trying to build something for today, tomorrow, I have like a 10-year plan, maybe even a 100-year plan ahead of this. I'm genuinely trying to build, Nike started somewhere. Huge, huge brands started somewhere with one guy in his house coming up with a pair of shoes.
People forget that wasn't that long ago. That is the most recommended book. The Hard Thing About the Hard Things and Shoe Dog are two of the most recommended books in the podcast.
Shoe Dog's a great book.
But people forget, that was just one dude.
Yeah.
That was just one guy selling shoes.
Yeah.
So I love when you, because, right? So it's not exactly a new product, right? People are always searching for the new thing. Oh, this new tech product. Oh, this new AI product. Oh, the metaverse. Build fantastic products.
Yeah.
There is enough room in the world to build more fantastic products. I teach down in Trinity, and on a Saturday, the queue will be down the street from Bread 41.
Yeah, I've been there. It's brilliant.
It's just a bakery.
Yeah. Yeah.
In flippant, simple terms, but it's not.
Yeah.
Because they do it exceptionally well.
Yeah.
The queue is down the street for a reason.
Yeah.
So I love when people take a simple product and just make it so good. And especially here in Ireland, I think we've ample scope to do this. We have incredible products like food, drink. There's definitely scope for more brilliant products like this.
And do you know what? Part of how we have a great product, right? Boils down to me being inexperienced. So when I started, I didn't know the rules of soap making, right? I was teaching myself.
Yeah.
I was doing my own research. I was doing my own experimentation. I didn't know that, generally in a soap, you'd never really want to put in more than 1 or 2 or 3% of shea butter because shea butter is really expensive. I just read that it was really good for your skin. So I put loads of it in. Right. And now our soap is actually more than 20% shea butter, which is really expensive, but it makes your skin feel really good. Mm. So you feel great about the product after you use it. And so I just didn't know the traditional rules, let's say. I was just experimenting and doing things that I liked. And I've done that with my deodorant as well. And it's really kind of stood to the brand. People often ask me, are you going to make products for women? And the reason I don't is I don't know what they like. I actually don't make products for men. I make products for me. That's all I do is create things that I like and then it works.
I love that though. I always say this, turn your weakness into a strength.
Yeah.
You didn't know the soap business.
No, it's just.
But that shouldn't stop you. You should be able to, yes, there's great having deep domain knowledge, but you deep domain knowledge in ads.
Yeah.
You layered that on top. You don't have to have it all.
Yeah,
people are always waiting. When I'll do one more course, or read one more book, or read, listen one more blog, watch one more blog, or whatever. You don't need all that.
You just learn by doing.
Exactly, and that's why it's called the Entrepreneur Experiment. That's the whole genesis of this podcast, is to talk to people who experiment. And you kind of sum up what I believe the new modern breed of entrepreneur is. It's someone who just experiments, test result. Okay, tweak. It's phenomenal. That is one of the best stories. We're going to do our quick fire round. What's the one book every entrepreneur should read?
So we'd mentioned Shoe Dog. I love Shoe Dog, but I don't have a specific book. I would just say a poker book. I think it gives you a whole different insight into risk versus reward.
If you're going to read one, what one would you read?
I'd probably go, I would just, I don't know that I would recommend one book, just any poker
book. Poker strategy, poker theory, something
poker
like that.
For beginners. Poker you know what beginners. I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, keep it simple. Just learn about EV. Yeah.
I'm going to have a founder's poker night because we had Michael O'Dwyer on from Pigsback and he loves playing poker. He's gone to the Irish Open, he's gone to Vegas, he's done World Series poker. And he was like, you need to start, loads of founders play poker, you need to start a poker night. So I'm going to start a founder's poker night now.
I'm in.
I'll organize. I'm not, definitely not going to play after you two sharks. What's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself since starting the business?
The biggest thing I've learned about myself is to just be honest and transparent. And that goes a long way. I have very strong feelings about how companies should represent themselves. And, you know, we started on TikTok recording what we're doing. We still share everything publicly. I share the figures I've shared here on my Twitter. I've shared, every quarter I put our financial figures out there. It's not because we're boasting or showing off. It's just transparency. Same with all our ingredients, all our methods, how we make our things. And so, ever since embracing that, I think it's really important to me as a person, I guess.
I share the exact same thing. Every month, I share my stats on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And it's bloody hard because they're not massive, but they've been growing. And I share what I've learned and what I haven't learned. And it's funny. I just do it for, because I like to be honest. I don't like selling. I don't like going, oh, look at this. But I like to be transparent and going, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm learning. Like I was saying to you about the TikTok videos and stuff, translating people into listeners. And I do that every month. And I heard a story back, which potentially could lean my, to be my biggest interview ever. One of the biggest companies in the world, they were coming to do like a UK, Ireland tour last year. And the PR company that represents them sent them my pod. And they're like, oh, this is the guy in Ireland if you want to do a pod. And they end up didn't do in Ireland. And they're like, oh, look, we looked at the stats, too small. The other one they were doing was Diary of CEO in the UK. So I was like, fair enough. Doesn't really compare yet. And then I got a call of a guy last week going, so here's what happened. We didn't tell you at the time, but they're coming back around this May. And it's an outside chance they're going to come to Ireland. And if they do, they've agreed to come on your podcast because they've watched your journey.
Yeah, great.
Mad. Like mental. I'll tell you the company off air. Crazy. And I was just, that was one of those moments where I'm like, oh wow, it's okay. It's good to be transparent. It's good to be authentic. And I always have been, and I always continue to be, but it's nice to get those moments where you're like, people do watch and people do listen and people do respect it.
And the other thing is, it's personal accountability.
That's for me. Good pressure. 2024 is the year of good pressure for me. I want to put good pressure on myself.
I put my figures up out there, right? And then I also put my goals for next quarter. And then I retweet it to force myself to be accountable.
Love it.
So, and I know it's coming, right? So like I'm there, am I going to hit that figure that I put out in December for this quarter? I think we are, you know, but there's pressure. And if we don't hit it, we don't hit it, you know, but I like doing that. It's personal. I don't have a board, right?
Yeah.
So I use it as an invisible board to be accountable to, is myself and my invisible followers.
We need to get you involved. Me and James do this accountability thing every quarter. We sit down every quarter, map out our goals, map out what we're going to do.
Yeah.
It's powerful. You need that.
It is powerful.
Because when you're on your own, you're the easiest person in the world to bullshit to.
Yeah.
You're the easiest person.
It's very easy to lie to yourself.
Tough month because, you know, X, Y, Z and blah, blah, blah. Whereas when you're like, oh, I said I was going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. The oldest adage in gambling, you know, you only remember your wins.
Yeah, it's true. You know, so it's very, very powerful. If you start a new business in the morning, what would it be?
I would probably stay close to home now. If I was going to start another business, it would be looking at what synthetic products are in the market. And how can we replace them with natural products? So most of the stuff that we use in our day-to-day lives, we don't realize this, but it was actually, they were actually like formulated in the 70s or 80s when it was cool to smoke in the maternity wing. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Like seatbelts weren't mandatory and
exactly.
Guinness was given for your health.
Yeah. And they're the products that we still use in our house to clean or on our skin to clean or even in our food. So I think there's going to be a whole shift in the next decade away from all that crap and towards more natural, healthier alternatives. So if I was going to start something else, it would probably be in the, I don't know, something like that. Maybe clean your home naturally or something like that.
Well, when you see the TikTok trends of like, my wife is massively into this, like natural cleaning ingredients, like lemon, going back to the old stuff, lemon, bicarbonate soda, soda, all that kind of stuff. You're like, yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Whereas instead of you're spraying all these chemicals all around your house, you're like, that's and then breathing it in, really bad.
Yeah.
And it's all the compounding. I'm a big believer in the compounding effect. What you do all the time compounds. It won't hurt you immediately, but over time, it cannot be good. What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
Today? Yeah, I'd probably put 99% of it into the black stuff. Yeah, turn it into 100, maybe. Yeah.
I like that. I like that confidence.
Yeah.
What's something in your daily routine you wish had started sooner?
I go through phases in my routine. I wish I could say, oh yeah, it was the getting up at 6 a.m. and exercising for an hour and reading a book and doing 10 minutes of yoga and meditating, because I've done that, but not sustainably forever. I think, like, don't hold yourself to, it's okay not to do amazing things all the time. I go through phases where it's either it's fitness or stuff like that for your mental sanity, but I don't do it all the time. And I'm comfortable with that.
Okay.
Yeah. So what was the question? What do I wish I'd started seeing?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably just accepting that it doesn't have to be, you know.
Not being militant with it.
Yeah. Just chill a little. Yeah.
Enjoyable too. If I had to give you, I'm going to give you 1 million euro. You know, I invested in one person or one company. Who would it be? Not yourself.
Yeah. I thought hard about this one, but I think I would still put the money on Shopify because Shopify, you know, I bought stock in Shopify 10 years ago. Unfortunately, I sold it, you know, a year later to go on holidays.
Oh, but, that's one of those ones I had Bitcoin in 2016 stories.
Oh, I did that with Bitcoin as well.
Oh, God.
But listen, you have to be comfortable with decisions you make at the time.
EV, baby. Yeah. EV, I wanted that holiday in Santa Barbara. Yeah.
I still think Shopify is going to dominate the market for the next decade when it comes to commerce. They're an unbelievable company.
It's hard to look past them, I think.
Yeah.
What do you believe that other people would strongly disagree with or find strange?
Just to be yourself, actually. It's okay not to conform. It's okay to be quirky. It's okay to be embarrassing. You know, it's okay to make a TikTok video and look like an idiot and have your friends laugh at you, mock you, because they're your friends. They're taking the piss and having fun. Yeah, so that. Just be comfortable in your own skin. Yeah, not worry too much about what other people think. Do what you think is right. Yeah.
I put out about 2-3 hours content every week. My tip is don't read the comments.
Yeah.
That's my tip.
I like reading the comments.
Do you? Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah.
TikTok's a strange place. Yeah, I still reply to every single comment on every ad, you know, and I'll defend my brand to the get-go. And like yesterday I was arguing with, not arguing, but defending ourselves against some guy who had a peach for a head in his, and then it was like the third message and I was just like,
no.
What am I doing?
No, it's just because it never leads to anywhere good. No. I'm just like, no, it's a bad place. People are not kind.
No, on the internet, with behind the sanctuary of anonymity.
It's always user 67 or Trek 7 or some of these losers. You're just like, because if you start, it just ruins your day.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I made a vow about 6 months ago. I made a vow like, no, that's it.
Well, do you know what I do, right? I didn't tell you earlier, but we have this Facebook community, a bit like the group, the soap group, right? But there's 7,000 Black Stuff fans in it. And often I will engage with naysayers in ad comments and then screenshot it all in a humorous fashion and wind them up and then screenshot it and share it into our group for comedy value.
Nice. So, you're reusing this.
I was
only saying it to someone last week. I had to go in and check something and I was like, what is wrong with people? I was like, I think I'll hire someone part-time just to go in and be funny.
Yeah, fun in the ad comments.
I think I'll just hire like a reverse troll, just a comedian who wants to earn a few extra quid. Yeah. I'll just get him or her to go in and just be funny in the comments back to them. What's something in your personal life you spend money on that brings you happiness?
Holidays, for sure. It's something, thanks to my wife and her expensive taste, that we've always done ever. And maybe it goes back to playing poker for a living and not having respect for the value of money and things like that. But we've always spent way too much money on nice holidays.
It's all relative, though. And if your kitchen is now a soap factory, I think she deserves it.
Yeah.
What's your favorite holiday?
skiing in Whistler, Canada, my favorite place.
That is bougie.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's your final piece of advice to every entrepreneur listening?
Take risk would be my advice, but calculated risk. And let me backtrack, actually. I'm going to change that. It's be patient, okay? It's take risk, but in a patient manner. Success takes time. That's one thing I've definitely learned, and you can't force it. And if you try and force it, it leads to more risk of ruin. So your expected EV goes down. And just think about, you know, growing slowly over time is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, good things take time.
Super. John, that was one of the most enjoyable interviews we've ever done on this podcast. Thank you so much for coming in. Where can people learn more about you, but most importantly, buy some of the Black Stuff?
Yeah, just theblackstuff.com. Yeah.
Great name, great domain. John, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.